8:06 now on this Monday, February 3rd. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. 8:06, 40 degrees here in Old Town Park City under mostly cloudy skies. Heber City reporting 41 degrees. And on the phone with us, our best-dressed meteorologist, Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Good to hear you this morning. And I'll tell you what, we've got these temperatures that are quite warm out there. We've got numbers in the 40s across, as you mentioned, most of the Wasatch back, but they're going to be climbing today. In fact, we're looking at highs climbing to around 50 to 55 degrees this afternoon. So, yeah, after a weekend where we saw a lot of mountain snow, some rain from time to time, some winter-like conditions, we're going to be seeing some very spring-like conditions as we go throughout today. Now, even though it's going to be warm throughout the day, don't expect a ton of sunshine. In fact, we're talking about mostly cloudy to cloudy skies expected across both Park City and the Heber Valley. So don't expect a lot of sunshine, but it will still warm up with some gusty winds out of the south as well. Now, so going to your forecast for tonight, we're looking at overnight lows only dropping down into the low to mid 40s across the area with partly to mostly cloudy skies. And as we go throughout the day on your Tuesday, high temperatures back into the 50s across the area with partly to mostly cloudy skies. So we've got two spring-like days with temperatures warming on up there into the 50s after morning lows dropping down into the 40s across the area. And then we start to see some changes. Our next weather system arrives on our Wednesday. That will bring us some, we'll call it a rain-snow mix across the area. Temperatures will likely be above freezing during the event, so it's not looking like it's going to be a significant event for most of us, as in fact, even in Park City, I'm expecting temperatures to start off in the mid-30s, climbing into the low 40s and on Wednesday, and then in the Heber Valley, upper 30s with highs in the mid-40s, again, with that chance of a little rain-snow mix, but again, with temperatures above freezing, not looking like it's going to be a major deal. Now, as we go into your Thursday, we could start to see some cold air working its way in so that by Friday, when our next storm system approaches, that one could be mostly snow for both Park City and the Heber Valley as temperatures will be back into the 30s for highs as we get towards your Friday. And then going into your Saturday, we're talking about the chance of off and on snow showers across the area with temperatures dropping for lows back into the low 20s and highs back struggling to get above freezing. So yeah, we've got some very spring-like conditions here as we go throughout the next couple of days with the warm weather, temperatures climbing well into the 50s. But then by the time we get towards the end of the week, we're talking about, yes, more wintry-like conditions returning with temperatures at or below freezing, off and on chances of snow moving across the area. And by the time we get towards Sunday, we could be talking about temperatures back down into the single digits for lows in the Heber Valley, and also temperatures around 10 degrees for overnight lows in Park City with that off and on chance of snow shower activity. But yeah, it's going to be quite the change going throughout this week, a complete 180, as they like to say, as we go from spring back to winter.
Yeah, it's winter. Let's keep it winter. But thank you.
Yes. Yes, no problem.
Okay. And with a look in the backcountry on the phone with us from the Utah Avalanche Center, it's Nikki. Good morning.
Good morning. So yesterday was a pretty busy day in the backcountry. In the Salt Lake area mountains, we saw about 15 avalanches reported. In the backcountry and ski resorts reported widespread wind slab activity, as well as some wet loose activity at mid and lower elevations that was gouging into the old snow. Today, we've got three main problems. The first is going to be that wind-drifted snow. So winds have remained elevated over the last 24 hours. We even saw some gusts near 100 miles per hour. This will form both soft slabs and hard slabs of wind-drifted snow on all aspects. And at most elevations with such high winds, we could see some wind slabs in those lower elevations as well. Cornices should be paid attention to, especially along the Park City ridgeline. There were multiple reports of cornice-triggered avalanches yesterday. So limit exposure, don't get too close to them, and don't travel below them as they could trigger a larger slab or just entrain a lot of snow as they broke. Second issue is that persistent weak layer that we keep talking about. So now we've got two buried persistent weak layers. The first layer is the near surface facets that formed last week during the cold snap. This layer isn't bonding well to either the new snow or the wind drifted snow. This is what caused most of the avalanches we saw yesterday. The second layer we want to think about is that persistent weak layer that formed in December and was responsible for the large holiday avalanche cycle. These are 1 to 3 feet deep and most likely to be triggered during a period of heavy loading, so during the storms, during high winds. And then finally today, we just want to think about the wet snow. So we've got these above average temperatures. Be cautious of wet, loose avalanches at mid and lower elevations, particularly in like steep, rocky, or gully features. It might not be enough to bury you, but they're enough to knock you off your feet. So pay attention to where you're traveling. Temperatures are only increasing throughout the day and into tomorrow, so that danger is going to rise. Today, we've got considerable avalanche danger on all mid and upper elevation slopes.
Okay. Be careful out there. Thank you, Nikki. Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the Local News Hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Salt Lake Tribune culture editor Sean Means, reflecting on this year's Sundance Film Festival. Heber City Manager Matt Brower will preview Tuesday's city council meeting, including a discussion of whether or not they should go look at paid parking in the downtown area. Finally, from the U.S. Ski and Snowboard Communications and Marketing Director Courtney Harkin, she'll be joined by Deer Valley Communications Director Emily Summers. They'll preview this weekend's Intermountain Health Freestyle World Cup happening at Deer Valley. Well, Park City could move to install paid parking kiosks at several popular trailheads to help manage congestion at Bonanza Flat. KPCW's Parker Malatesta has more about that.
In 2017, Park City purchased the 1,500 acres that make up Bonanza Flat, nestled between Empire Pass, Brighton, and Wasatch Mountain State Park.
Bonanza Flat Conservation Area was perhaps one of the most unique preservation saves, I think, in the history of Utah.
That's Utah Open Lands Executive Director Wendy Fisher. She said Park City voters approved a $25 million bond to help fund the open space purchase. Utah Open Lands brought in another $13 million in private funding.
And all of this was because Bonanza was headed towards 260 units of development, ski in, ski out, 18-hole golf course, really an environment that would be wholly different from what you see there today.
In recent years, the area's popularity has grown, particularly with hikers, mountain bikers, and scenic drivers.
2020 and the pandemic was a game changer for open space in the state of Utah. And I've heard this nationally too. But in Utah, we saw a 300% increase in use of our open spaces throughout the state. And Bonanza Flat was not immune to this. We saw, in some instances, a 1,000-fold increase in daily use on some of the trails.
Bonanza Flat user data collected over the summer of 2023 found Park City residents made up just 7% of the visitors. Salt Lake City locals made up the largest portion at 25%. The data also shows that most visitors stay in Bonanza Flat for less than 45 minutes. Thursday, the City Council will review proposed amendments to Bonanza Flat's management plan to protect the visitor experience, discourage single-occupancy vehicles, and protect the area's natural beauty, according to Park City Municipal Spokesperson Clayton Scrivener. The proposed changes include adding paid parking kiosks at several trailheads, including Bloods Lake, Bonanza Flat, and Empire Pass. Parking would be free for residents of the 84060 zip code. All others would pay for parking. That price will be up to the council. As part of the paid parking plan, the city would also expand public transit access to Bonanza Flat. From July 3rd to October 30th, Park City Transit's Purple Bus would be converted to a shuttle and service the area's trailheads. The shuttle would run Friday to Monday from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. every 15 minutes. The Purple Bus normally travels between Old Town and the Montage Hotel. The proposed move is seen as an enhancement to the existing Transit to Trails program, which provides free rides to Bonanza Flat. The City Council is also considering a new trailhead with 15 paid parking stalls at the intersection of Guardsman Pass Road and Pine Canyon Drive. In August 2023, Park City permanently banned parking at the Y intersection because of overuse and congestion. Major trailheads across Big Cottonwood Canyon, which connects directly to Bonanza Flat, are beginning to charge fees as part of a new U.S. Forest Service initiative. Fisher said Bonanza Flat could be exposed to a flood of traffic if fees aren't implemented.
It's all about protecting the resources, and we are very interested in what people have to say, and we hope that they can realize that this really is geared towards understanding that if we don't do something, especially as other jurisdictions are making this move, we really could jeopardize what we have at Bonanza Flat. And that's what we're taking measures and steps to avoid.
Last year, Park City Council members already signaled they would consider paid parking to reduce negative impacts in Bonanza Flat. The council will consider approving the proposed changes at its meeting Thursday. The public can comment before the council votes. The meeting agenda and a link to attend virtually can be found at kpcw.org. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
On the phone with a look back at the last 11 days and what's next for the festival as it contemplates its next spoon, I have Salt Lake Tribune culture editor Sean Means. Good morning, Sean. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
So how many years has it been since you've covered Sundance?
This is my 34th.
Okay. And how much time did you get to spend in Park City this year?
I was up there, let's see, about 5 days at the start, and then I came up for the award ceremony last Friday.
All right. Now, your goal used to be to see all of the films in competition, both dramatic mm-hmm. and documentary. Did you get to do that this year?
I saw eight of the ten of the U.S. Dramatic. I saw a couple documentaries and a smattering of other stuff, so... Yeah. It varies.
Yeah. And do you prefer to watch them with the audience or online?
When possible, I'd rather see it in person, but that doesn't always work out. So I watched a few before the festival online, and I watched a couple in the last few days as the online portal opened up.
Yeah. And do you usually stay for the Q&As then, or do you get a lot of
sometimes. Them?
Yeah.
It depends a lot on the schedule.
Sure. Yeah.
If I have to rush to the next thing, then no.
Uh-huh. So what's your feel for this year's festival?
Good. Well, I mean, it generally I saw more good movies than bad movies. I only saw one that I didn't really like. Weirdly enough, it won the Grand Jury Prize, which happens sometimes. The movie Atropia, which won the Grand Jury Prize. I need to watch it again, I think, to see if I can see what the jury saw.
Hmm. So. Did you get to see Seeds then?
I did not. That was one that is I'll have to wait till it comes around again in either theatrical or probably more likely TV.
Yeah. What about Zodiac Project?
I did see Zodiac Killer Project. Right. I thought that was a very fascinating experiment where the filmmaker Charlie Shackleton was going to make a movie about the Zodiac Killer based on a book that he was trying to option, and at the last minute the family of the author said no. Said that they would not sell him the licensing rights to the book. And so he made a movie about what movie he would have made and what kind of movie gets made in this era of true crime on Netflix and HBO and so on. And I think probably he wound up with a lot better movie, because if he had made a movie that would just fit into the true crime drama genre, it'd be one thing. But instead he made a movie that sort of critiques the true crime genre. And that turned out to be a much more interesting movie.
Hmm, interesting. And I think with that one, it just had to do with when you watched it, whether or not you were kind of alert and paying attention or just on the sleepy side of things.
Yeah. It, I mean, every, you know, it, which will be a hindrance if a movie you actually have to pay attention to may hinder which streaming outlets may buy your movie, because... You know, the joke is, you know, Netflix is the place to go to, you know, half watch movies while you're folding laundry, right?
Mm. Well, let's talk a little bit about, you know, I always ask you, well, what were your favorites? So let's start with the U.S. Dramatic.
My favorite overall of the whole 11 days was a movie called Sorry Baby, which actually won the Waldo Salt Screenwriting Award. Brilliant movie. This young talent named Eva Victor, who I'd never heard of before. She's the writer, director, and the star of it. She plays a New England academic. We see her over several years in the movie go from a grad student to a professor. And it is about how her life is sort of stuck in place because of a bad thing that happened to her fairly early in this narrative. And without getting into too much detail, this bad thing affects her and sort of, like I said, leads her to be stuck in place while the rest of the world is still going on.
Okay. And then some of your others then, favorites?
I would say, let's see here, let me find my best list. One I really liked was Plainclothes, which was a drama set in 1997 in the Don't Ask, Don't Tell era. And you have a young cop who works undercover, luring prospective suspects into bathrooms, and when they expose themselves, then they get arrested. And he does this with one prospective guy and actually starts having attraction for the guy. Great cast, Tom Blythe, who we would know from the Hunger Games song, Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes, and Russell Tovey, who is a British actor who's really good. Really, really strong, really solid performances, really solid look at gay attraction and the perils of it in the 90s.
Okay. Go ahead.
Well, my other favorite is in the documentaries, and actually won the Audience Award for documentaries. It's called Andre is an Idiot. This is a movie about a guy named Andre Riccardi, who was a San Francisco advertising guy and iconoclast, very funny, very acerbic. And he did a dumb thing, which was he didn't get a colonoscopy when he should have. And a year after he was supposed to get his colonoscopy, he gets diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer, which is why the title is what it is. He was an idiot for not getting his colonoscopy. And this is a very irreverent, very funny, and very moving look at his struggle, his battle with cancer, and how it affected his family and everything else. And the reason it's irreverent and funny is because he's irreverent and funny. He's not going to, he's not going to give you the narrative you think you're going to get. He's taking this on with the same sort of humor that he's taken on everything else in his life. And that comes through in the movie.
Yeah, it was absolutely hilarious, and about, you know, somebody dying, which is just so ironic. But
right.
Yeah. Tell me about some of the international. Did you have a chance to see some of those international films?
A little bit. There was one called Brides that was very moving. You had it was set in Wales and Turkey, and you follow these two young women who are Muslim immigrants living in Wales, high school kids, and they've decided they are done with all the bullying and racism and everything else where they live, plus their family situations, and they have been told that there is a paradise awaiting for them, for all Muslim young women, if they go to Syria. Obviously, those of us, you know, anybody with any sense or sense of geography and history knows that that's, you know, being sold a bill of goods, but they believe it, and they are determined they're going to get to Syria, and so they basically run away from home, and the movie is following their journey together. It's really strong sort of drama about this bond between these two friends and the lengths that they will go to get what they think is going to be a better life for them.
All right.
It's really good.
Yeah. And in terms of the documentary world cinema?
Documentary world, the one I saw that I really liked was Prime Minister. It's actually an American-made film, but it's American in New Zealand. And it's this really strong profile of Jacinda Ardern, who was the Prime Minister of New Zealand. And it was interesting to see a world leader who, you know, is as thoughtful and as smart and as caring as she is. And it's a very... Access is everything in documentaries, and this movie had incredible access. Not only do you have all the sort of official, you know, following her around in official circumstances, you also have her husband, who's a broadcaster, was videotaping or was you know, shooting on his phone moments inside the family house, and, you know, intimate portrait inside of their lives. And she had recorded a audio diary that was meant to be not made public until after she died. But she would record an audio diary for this oral history project, where she would talk basically once a week with the people running this project and say what she felt about what was going on. And there was so much going on in New Zealand over her tenure. There was the mass shooting at the mosque in Christchurch, New Zealand. There was, of course, COVID and the response to COVID and the backlash to the response to COVID. The similar pattern that we saw in the United States was happening there, even to the extent of, in New Zealand, there were Trump flags flying from the people protesting the the COVID restrictions. And you got to wonder, of all the things that America's importing, that why would we be importing that? But we did.
It appears that documentary audiences now seem to be interested in just watching docs about celebrities, cults, and true crime. And programmers at Sundance say they'll continue to focus on those docs that they think are important, not those that guarantee financial success. It seems like we used to see these bidding wars happen at Sundance and good prices being paid. And I don't know, not a whole lot happening. Any thoughts about that?
The market seems slow this year. There were only two major deals. One of them was for this body horror movie called Together with Dave Franco and Alison Brie. And the other, and I can't remember what the other one was, but it was a Netflix buy. It was Train Dreams, which was a drama that was actually the Salt Lake City Gala opening on Saturday, the first Saturday, with Joel Edgerton starring in it. And I think part of it is just the way the industry is going right now, outside of Sundance, just that people are very cautious. People are very, people in the industry are very cautious. I think everybody was sort of in shell shock after the fires in LA and not really in a mindset to be buying. I think it'll happen. I think you'll see a lot of the films, that have come out of the festival will start signing distribution deals in the next few months. But right now it is a buyer's market. The people making the films are finding that it is a little difficult right now.
Yeah.
Now talking about the true crime stuff, I mean, obviously that's what, you know, Netflix and so on are going for. And I don't think Sundance goes against the grain anyway. It always will. And you notice that the movies that are about true crime are not true crime themselves so much. Although you do have a movie like The Perfect Neighbor, which was about a Stand Your Ground case that went sideways. But you also have movies like Zodiac Killer Project or like Predators, which actually examined the TV series To Catch a Predator, the one where Chris Hansen would, you know, come into the room and say, "Hey, would you take a seat?" to some guy who came there on the pretense that he would have relations with an underage girl or sometimes a boy. It was an examination of how that show became so popular, became like culturally iconic, to the point that there are like copycats and imitators of it on YouTube and so on. And looking at what that show created in terms of our fascination with true crime. So the movies at Sundance, the documentaries at Sundance that are about true crime are not about actual crimes. They're about the genre of true crime and sort of dissecting that.
Our just last few minutes here, any speculation on whether Sundance stays in Utah after next year?
The elephant in the room. Yes. This was the great topic of conversation in lines and buses and everywhere else, is what's going to happen come end of March, early April, whenever it is, when Sundance finally makes its announcement about what it's going to do. They have said they are, you know, they started a bidding process after Park City's contract ends at the end of the 26th festival. What they will do in 27 and beyond, it won't be Park City. It will be possibly a little bit Park City, but if the Salt Lake City bid wins, if the Utah bid wins, it'll be primarily Salt Lake City with a few events in Park City, which will have some sort of historical continuity, I suppose. And then the other two bidders, Boulder, Colorado, and Cincinnati, Ohio. I don't have any speculation because I simply don't know. The people who know don't say, and the people who say don't know. And Sundance officials were very tight-lipped about it. They say they haven't actually finished making the decision, that they are still looking at the three bids. There's information coming in all the time. We've seen that Governor Cox has put $3 million in the state budget to try to attract Sundance to stay in Utah. Other Colorado legislature just started through a bill to offer $34 million in tax incentives, which is not the same thing as, you know, $3 million up front. But there's all kinds of, and the state of Ohio, I think, is doing something similar. There is a bidding war. I mean, money is going to be a part of it, but it's not going to be the only part of it. The people I talk to from Sundance swear up and down There are a number of factors in terms of accommodations, in terms of vibe, in terms of money, all of it that are all going to come into play when they make the final decision. I don't know which way it's going to go at this point. I have speculated before, and I don't, and I've realized, you know, it's going to happen when it happens, and I don't have a good guess at right now.
Yeah, but it feels like it's so much more about money than film anymore.
Well, I mean, the festival has always been about money, ever since Miramax offered $1 million for Sex, Lies, and Videotape back in 1989. Money has always been at play in the festival, and that's the way of the world. We money is how we measure things. Money is how we decide who wins. And there are a lot of issues involving accommodation and being able to afford hotel. You know, if you talk about money, let's talk about how much money Park City had been making off the festival, and how, if you believe some people, they strangled their own golden goose because things got too expensive up in Park City. You can't, if you've got a film, I talked to filmmakers who, you know, came up to the festival with their film, and they were staying in Heber. You know, the closest hotel they could get was in a different county. So, you know, the money issue, you know, money has been an issue at Sundance as long as there's been a Sundance. And that's one of the reasons why they decided they needed to leave Park City as the primary location, because the people that they are trying to help, which is the filmmakers, simply couldn't afford to be in Park City anymore. Yeah. And so that's why I think that's the main reason why we're in the situation we're in now.
Okay. I got to leave it there. Sean Means, always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Sean Means, again, is the culture editor at Salt Lake Tribune. Well, the Heber City Council meets tomorrow afternoon in work session starting at 4. On the phone with a preview of the meeting, I have City Manager Matt Brower. Good morning, Matt. Thanks for joining us.
Leslie, good morning.
First off, the council will discuss whether to terminate a 20-year agreement with the Wasatch Water Efficiency Team. What does this provide Heber City with?
Heber City 20 years ago did not have a lot of expertise in managing water shares, water rights, water infrastructure, particularly as related to pressurized irrigation. The last 20 years, the city has become very efficient, very competent, and has a very robust pressurized irrigation system that we manage. And so it's staff's position that we go ahead and terminate that agreement because we have the expertise and the wherewithal in-house to manage it and do the work ourselves.
Okay, so what's the cost savings here?
It's not really a cost savings as much as it is an efficiency. The water company, the not-for-profit corporation, is no longer relevant, and it's just an inefficiency in the way it's handled right now.
Okay. Later on, the council will review the recommended parking strategies for downtown Heber. This was reviewed at the recent budget retreat, and the council wanted more discussion on it. I guess in a nutshell, can you kind of tell us what's being proposed here? Lots of things.
Yeah, it's a mix of a number of things. One of the main limitations we have in downtown Heber is insufficient parking. Insufficient parking for existing businesses, insufficient parking for the growth of new businesses, and inefficient parking for the city's events that we have in the downtown. So the study is looking at how we can try to eliminate that limitation by buying land for parking, by maybe doing a parking structure, by partnering with new development in the downtown to have them pay a fee in lieu into the parking investments we're making so that they don't have to buy land themselves, can invest it in their business and their employees. So it's a mix of recommendations, and council wants to hear more about it, and we'll discuss it more on Tuesday night.
All right. There's also this proposed parking district that would span from 100 North to 400 South, from about 150 West, I think, to 150 East. So why the need for this parking district?
The district itself would serve as a means to oversee the parking, strategy and implementation of the parking strategy. And the businesses, the property owners in that district could partner with the district to bring about the parking. So they're not individually responsible for providing their own parking. They could use the district's parking to meet their parking needs. So it's trying to create efficiencies where there are none right now.
And there are also plans, as you mentioned, for about a $17 million parking structure. I think I read that this would be about 300 parking stalls. So where's this plan for?
So there are a couple structures proposed in the parking study. one on 100 West and another one over on the east side of the road near Dairy Queen. Those are off in the future. The strategy first proposes looking at surface parking and then transitioning into the parking structures as the need warrants. So right now our strategy is looking at purchasing strategic properties to bring about the surface parking numbers.
Okay, so there's also talk about bringing paid parking to downtown. Would that impact this surface parking that you're talking about?
It could. Roger Brooks proposing that we do provide some type of means of paid parking to make sure that we don't have people that are just camping out, so to speak, in front of businesses, that we have a rotating of parking spaces. But I believe that is something that will be implemented years down the road. You got to have sufficient parking before you can actually begin a metering for the parking. And so our goal right now is to provide that parking space.
All right. So this would, paid parking would only be within the outlined parking district. Is that the plan?
Yeah, that's correct. That's what's proposed. Mm-hmm.
And what have businesses had to say about these proposals?
The feedback we've gotten is very positive. We have a number of businesses who want to expand, but because the city's current parking regulations require them to provide a certain number of additional spaces, they're unable to buy the land or lease the land that's necessary for them to expand their businesses. So when I say that parking is a limiting factor in the downtown, indeed, it very much is. And so by coming together, partnering, and the city maybe taking a leadership role in developing the parking, the businesses are essentially saying, thank you, this is a long time in coming.
All right. And other changes I noted, there seemed to be a proposal for angled parking on streets. Are we talking about Main Street, US 40, or are we talking about some of the other outlying areas?
There's some of the other outlying areas, particularly 100 West. 100 West from approximately, I'm sorry, between about 200 North, about 300 South in particular. That's a priority area by council's identified. And what we're trying to do is take advantage of on-street parking, and angle parking is a proven way of doing just that.
Adding how many spots? Any idea?
We're not sure. We're looking at that now. One of the challenges we have is a lot of existing driveways that really impact the number of angled parking spaces you can get. But as we begin purchasing some of the strategic properties, like a Heber Light and Power admin building that's on the agenda, we might be able to reduce the number of ingresses and egresses on the roadway, which would then allow us to add additional angled parking spaces.
Okay. And then there's also a plan for event parking as well.
Yeah, we have, as you know, the Heber Market on Main, which is becoming very successful. Thousands of people come each Thursday downtown, and we need more parking. We're seeing people park as far as 7-8 blocks away. So having event parking closer to the park is becoming a critical need.
Okay, let's move on. The council will also be asked to approve the strategic planning priorities for 2026. So what are the highlights of those?
So the council identified 9 priorities in their retreat this past January. Some of the highlights would be the Envision Central Heber, trying to bring about the initiative that was adopted by council back in 2023. Others include a transportation focus, trying to improve upon the congestion that's happening in the downtown area, as well as, of course, affordable housing, which has become a more of an acute issue.
Are these priorities kind of listed in order, you know, with the most important at the top?
No, they are not. They are not listed in order. These are the 9 top policy and budget priorities that the council established at the retreat, and hopefully tomorrow night they will adopt these. So staff will begin organizing their efforts around executing on those strategies.
All right. Also, a public hearing tomorrow on the Welberg-Kruger annexation. This is for about 303 acres just east of Red Ledges. We're talking about just building 2 large lots. So it's currently zoned 1 unit for 60 acres. So right now the property owner could only build 1 home. If approved, this annexation, the city would allow 1 home on 50 acres, 1 home on about 220 acres, and then there would be 30 acres for trails. So would those trails be open to the public, or are they private to Red Ledges?
Those trails would be open to the public. In fact, that's one of the positive things of this annexation, is it would complete a significant Red Ledges trail loop, and that trail would be open to the public.
All right. And why is it that they want to be annexed? I mean, they don't need to hook into water and sewer, or do they? The 2 lots.
The primary reason for annexation is they need access to existing road network, and that would be provided by Red Ledges, which is in Heber City. And so for us, it's a benefit because they're using the existing road network. They would not have to build any additional roads. And of course, the trail network, which you spoke about just a moment ago.
Okay, so is that a staff recommendation to go ahead and do this?
It is.
Yeah. All right, also council is scheduled to adopt the pro forma and term sheet for operating and programming the Sunset Ridge Amphitheater at Jordan L. Ridge. This is being built, I believe, by the Wasatch Arts Council. What's the city's role in this?
That's correct. The lead agency is the Wasatch Arts Council. Heber City negotiated an agreement with Jordan L. Ridge and the Wasatch Arts Council for the donation of 4.4 acres. For a performing arts center and outdoor amphitheater known as the Sunset Ridge Amphitheater. Wasatch Arts Council has hired a professional fundraiser, and they're hoping to have the funding completed by 2026 or 2027. So the agenda item is allowing us to begin talking about operations, event programming, design of the facility, because they believe they'll be very successful in getting that money raised here fairly shortly.
Okay, what's the soonest we could see construction on this?
I am being told by the group they hope to have it open by 2029.
Okay. And also on the budget, agenda, an approval of nearly $900,000. This would be from the CRA fund for the purchase of property from Heber Light and Power. So this is an old building. What would you use it for?
Parking. We hope to use it as surface parking. Part of the parking strategy we spoke about a moment ago. This is located on 100 West and on one of the critical blocks that we need additional parking.
All right, so we're talking about tearing down the building.
Maybe not initially, but certainly the plan is to level it to provide more surface parking. Mm.
So the power company doesn't need it anymore, huh?
The power company is building a brand new administration building on 600 West. They expect to have done in late 25. And so this agreement will allow us to purchase that property and lease it back to Heber Light and Power until the new admin building was done.
All right. Anything else you want to mention?
No, appreciate being on the radio. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Matt. Matt Brower is the city manager for Heber City. Well, the Intermountain Health Freestyle International World Cup returns to Deer Valley Resort this week. And in the studio with details, I have Emily Summers, Communication Director with Deer Valley, along with Courtney Harkins, Communication Director for the U.S. Ski and Snowboard. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Emily, how long has Deer Valley been doing this?
You know, we've been laughing. We count every year, but it's 27. I'm going with 27. A long time. Yeah.
Yeah. And crews, I guess, are busy building the jumps and moguls, or are we waiting for colder temperatures?
Nope. They have been building. If you were up there this weekend, lots of activity. When I left the slopes on Friday, the aerial hill was almost done. And then over the weekend was getting some awesome updates about Champion. We've upgraded all the lighting. So hopefully our spectators will really see that and the athletes will see a difference as we've updated LED lighting on the course. And that was all up as of Saturday.
Okay. And how are you guys dealing with the wet weather?
Yeah. Yep. You know, we are in the business of weather and we are pros at responding to whatever Mother Nature throws at us. Like I said, 27 years of hosting these international competitions. Most of the course builders and the volunteers have been here that long working on it. And so we just adapt, but the courses are ready and we'll start training with the athletes, I think, tomorrow.
Okay. All events are free.
All events are free.
Deer Valley is also offering some VIP ticketing. Are you all sold out of that?
I believe Friday and Saturday are sold out. There's probably a select few left for Thursday's Moguls events, and those would be at deervalley.com.
Okay. What does that get you?
That gets you access to the VIP tent, dinner, drinks, and a spectator kind of viewing area outside of the tent. But do want to reinforce that this is a free event for spectators. Come on up. This is kind of a thank you to our locals for supporting us and come cheer on those athletes that there's a lot that grew up here and have ties to the community and let's show up for them.
Okay. And as you mentioned, training does start before the competitions on Thursday. The rundown is moguls on Thursday, aerials on Friday, dual moguls on Saturday. When do people need to be there?
Yeah, competitions, finals are usually in like the 7 to 9 p.m. range, and then qualifications are the few hours before. Some of the days you'll catch the action while you're there on the slope skiing, but I do recommend people kind of start making their way if they want to catch the finals around 5 o'clock. And keep in mind that transit is an absolutely fantastic option. You get dropped off right there at Snow Park. We run increased buses with the city from Richardson Flat. So yeah, using transit would be a great way to get there.
And are you going to do that like you do with the summer concerts where the buses kind of have one way and don't get caught into the traffic until they hit it?
Buses and transit get priority.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I guess best advice, winter foot weather.
Yes. Winter wear, sturdy footwear. We do have a pedestrian path. We create stairs to get there, but it is a walk. I would give yourselves 20 minutes to get from the base lodge to the venue. We will be streaming it in our base lodge. If for some reason you need to come down and warm up or anything, we'll have Snow Park Lodge open late for food and beverage services and live streaming. And then most importantly, just keep in mind, we are a no bag venue. So please just whatever you need in your coat pocket. We will be screening bags, and we do have our basket check open if you did bring something up.
Okay. Any need for volunteers at this point?
Not at this point, but we will, be amping up. We do this every year, and we'll be on the Olympic venue again. So get on that wait list if you're interested in helping out.
Okay. And again, big screen TVs are set up, so it's not like even if you're in the back of the pack, you can still see pretty good.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. It's great spectator access, and with all the athletes that are here kind of locally with Ty's community, it's a great, great energy.
Okay, Courtney, let's talk a little bit about some of the athletes to keep our eyes open for.
Yeah, of course. We've been having a really good season in the freestyle moguls and freestyle aerials side. On the moguls side, keep an eye out for Jalen Koff. She is an Olympic silver medalist. She's had 4 podiums so far this year, she's had 6 podiums in both, and she won this weekend. And then Olivia Giacchio is another one on the women's mogul side. She's the one who's had 4 podiums, all individual podiums. So she's got a very good chance this weekend. And of course, town favorite and Deer Valley favorite, Nick Page, has had 2 podiums very recently. It's super exciting to see him on there. And he's really looking for his first podium at his home hill this weekend. So he's got a good chance.
Okay, another local, of course, will be Allie Masuga.
Allie Masuga, yeah, she's had some podiums in the past, none this year so far, but she's still right in the thick of it. I mean, this women's moguls team is just incredible. They are, consistently pushing towards the top. Usually, if there's an 8-person finals, they are 7 of the 8. So it's really talented, and Allie is one of those really incredibly powerful women and is a very much a Park City local.
And Deer Valley's newest ambassador.
Newest sponsored athlete. Yep, we're cheering for them all, but Nick and Allie, special place here at Deer Valley.
Okay.
And then on the aerial side, we've got a couple of good results that we've had recently as well. Chris Lillis, who's an Olympic gold medalist in aerials from 2022, just had a podium, I think, last weekend in Canada. So he's looking for it again. And Karenna Elliott has had a couple of podiums as well. So keep an eye out for them.
Okay. So the moguls athletes, do they prefer, do you think, singles or duels?
It depends on the athletes. They're really ready for both. They have more or less both every World Cup. There are some that are better at individual. There are some that are better at duels. Jalen Koff is a good example of someone who's very, very good at duels. She's known as the fastest woman on the World Cup circuit. So she... But of course, dual moguls is a combination of speed and technique. It is a judge sport as well. But she's always a force in duels, whereas Olivia has done a little bit better traditionally in individual.
More focused perhaps rather than watching.
Yeah, exactly. And she has some really big tricks that she can pull that aren't as common in duels just because the speed is so important.
Okay. Let's see. Anything else you want to mention about this weekend and in terms of what to look for?
No, it's going to be a great weekend. We're really excited to perform in front of the home crowd. All of the athletes are exceptionally excited. And I think, especially given that 2034 is now on the horizon with the Olympics coming in 10 years, there's a lot more, hubbub about this event as well.
Yeah. Tell me about the live television. Is anything going to be live or is it going to be just recorded and played?
Yeah. So we'll all be live. So if you can't make it up this weekend to come watch all 3 events, you can watch it live and for free on Outside TV, which is an app, or go online on outsideonline.com. It's also on Roku and Samsung TVs, etc. If you want to watch it on demand, that's when you do have to pay for it on Outside. But there is also going to be a broadcast on Sunday, I believe at noon, on NBC.
Okay. Let's see. Meanwhile, let's hear about some of the highlights from our other teams. Start with Alpine. Michaela Schifrin's back.
Michaela Schifrin is back, and we're so happy to have her back on the World Cup. She came back over, Thursday. It was in Courchevel. A great race for her. She finished 10th, which for her as a comeback race is exceptional. And we are heading into World Championships right now. So that starts off tomorrow. Everyone is in Austria and waiting for it to go. Tomorrow is the team parallel. Michaela won't be racing that, but we have a good team that I think we are announcing today. And then it will go into every event. We'll have 4 athletes per event, per gender from the US. And so hoping to bring home some medals. It's sort of the second biggest event for us besides the Olympics.
Yeah, I know. What it wasn't held every sec.
Yes,
so
like every
Olympics, and then 2 years the World Championships.
Exactly.
Yeah. So Michaela, I mean, she had a major injury, basically just stabbed herself with a ski pole. Is that how?
Yeah, we're not totally sure if it's a ski pole or what exactly it was, but she did impale herself at the Stiefel-Killington Cup a few months ago. But, you know, incredible recovery for her. They had to do a ton of research, working with different professional teams, you know, across the board to figure out how to recover from an abdomen injury. It's not super common in ski racing. But so, you know, pretty much 2 months almost to the day, she was able to come back and hop into the top 10 in the World Cup. So I think we'll see some additional great things from Michaela this season.
Okay. And I think that Alpine team has been named to World Championships, and that does include Lauren Masuga.
It does include Lauren Masuga, yes. So Lauren will likely be racing the downhill and the Super G, which is great. She's been one of our fastest speed athletes this year, right alongside, you know, famed athletes like Lindsey Vonn. So it's been very, very amazing to see. She had a win in St. Anton this year. And then I was just with her a couple of weeks ago in Europe, and she was just ecstatic to be out there and is continuing to perform in the top 10.
Okay. And then there's also a new event for World Championships, the team combined. What does that
Correct.
Mean?
Correct. This is a cool one, and it will be an Olympic event as well. So the combined in the past was one run of downhill and one run of slalom. And this year it's a team combined. So there's going to be a downhiller or a speed skier that's going to do the speed run, the downhill run, and then a tech skier who will do the slalom run. So we're going to pair up athletes together. And so it'll be based off of, you know, just the top speed athlete, top downhill athlete, and the top slalom athlete will be paired together. And then it will go down from there with 4 teams for each gender.
All right. So this is where Ted Ligety won his first gold medal.
Yes.
Was in the combined. That's no longer happening.
It's not as common anymore for athletes to be doing, you know, all of the events, especially as disparate as downhill and slalom are from each other. So this is a kind of a new test for FIS and seeing if it will work. But everyone's really excited about it. I think it'll be a lot of fun, and it creates some great camaraderie on the team.
Okay. And then we have heard that Rosie Brennan, also originally from Park City, has kind of backed off of the camp competition circuit. Sounds like she's got some injuries she just needs to let heal.
Yeah, she just needs some time off, which is good, and she'll be able to have some time and watch her teammates and give herself some time to recover and hopefully be back for the World Champs here in a few weeks.
Okay, so she's not out for the season, just some time off.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
Okay, but she's not talking about retirement at this point.
Not quite yet.
Okay. Anybody else you wanted to highlight?
No, I think, keep tuning in every week. We are, our social media is chock full of results. World Championships are coming up for Alpine. A couple weeks later, we'll have freestyle, Nordic. And then right after that, we'll have freestyle, free ski, and snowboard in March. So everyone's coming in, and it's a good test to see what will happen in the Olympics next year.
Okay. Again, a great event coming up Thursday night at Deer Valley Resort. Number one, just take the bus.
Yeah.
Okay. Emily Summers, Courtney Harkins, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.